from it. On the other hand, if others break away, we're going to feel free to break away. And we have lots of industrial users in the United States that are clamoring for gold. And we have private citizens. The Republican platform had it in, and private citizens in the U.S. ought to have the right to buy and sell gold. And if they want to open this subject up, okay, we're willing to. And that will just be a wild gold market over there. It won't have any effect as far as our own internal is concerned, but it will drive the Europeans crazy if that happens. So that's the position we might be in.
You got a good plan. You go forward.
All right, sir.
What's the date of the 28th?
Well, the meeting starts, I believe, the 24th, which is a Monday.
Yeah.
And that's the day we think your speech ought to be.
24th.
It is in the nature of a welcoming speech,
yeah.
But we felt that,
sure.
I know your wishes were that just to go and welcome people is not what you want to do. If you've got something to say, then it's worth going. And I think under these circumstances, you would have a sensational thing to say.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to get your reaction to what we have been doing in the wage price area. Of course, we are saying that as far as when are the controls coming off and so forth, that's another topic. We're trying to make them work, and we're pounding on the auto companies and trying to get beef prices down and all kinds of things. We're working with the controls. However, I have got Herbstein and Don Rumsfeld and myself, and we have some very small staff associated with us on this as a self-contained group that has not had any leaks, and I don't believe we'll have, trying to figure out what we should do when, and we have been trying to do this systematically and examine the 73 collective bargaining picture and the problems of the bulge and one thing and another. And the general idea that we have in mind is something like this. Assuming that the price indexes behave themselves between now and toward the end of the year, which I believe they will, our estimate is that while Monroe and others of this world are calling for a continuation of this through 1973, as a collective bargaining calendar, that if we don't basically bring the knife down on the pay board and the price commission and all that machinery promptly, it is going to be almost impossible to do that.
Sure.
It's never a good
price
to do it. So our thought would be if we did something like this, that we announce after the election a big labor management type meeting, say for the middle of December. And at that meeting, we're prepared to talk about the economy, sort of preview the economic report, preview the budget, give our thoughts about the collective bargaining outlook, kind of a big consensus-forming, jawboning, major thing. And either before then or at that meeting, announce you, but not necessarily, that as of that moment, or as of January 1st, or sometime, the argument for the January 1st is that you carry yourself through the Christmas season. The control system is changed, and the pay board is through, and the price commission is through, and all the IRS enforcement effort is over. The cost of living council remains in effect. We basically take the construction industry effort that has worked well, which they like, and we continue that as an entity that reports in through the Secretary of Labor as it did before. We set up something like that for the health industry, which actually I think the controls have made a pretty good dent on. The rate of increase prices in the health industry has slowed down quite a little. And I think perhaps more jaw boning and arm twisting and whatnot there might be helpful. And that we leave the cost of living council in a position to move on individual cases if you want, but that the sort of the formal structure of controls is drastically changed. And we go forward not on the basis of a complete return to a sort of an open free market situation.
But a strong
jawboning with the club there.
Will we ask for the information of legislation?
My feeling at this moment is that we ought to.
Sort of have that hanging over.
Because that basically gives you something to work with.
Yeah, right.
I have always had the opinion, and I don't know that I ever registered this with you from the first days of the administration. My view has been that a president ought to have the authority to impose wage and price controls. And that ought to be more or less permanently built in. But it ought to be built in with a hooker that says he can do it, but within some period of time, 3 months, 6 months, or something, the Congress must put into effect, reenact the legislation or something of that kind. Because it seems to me, as in the Korean period, this is leaving the present wage price thing out of it, that emergencies can arise, and the president has to be equipped to deal with them. And this is one of the things that can happen in the Korean thing, if you remember. The wage price business just went out of sight before the controls got enacted. The controls were meaningless. So that I think, whereas the way you did it, putting in the freeze and then the controls, that held things in place. You had the authority to do that, and then went on. So that would be my thinking on that, but we have not sort of really.
Well, let me say that I think this underlying thing here is to just deny any meetings are taking place that seem to be being considered or anything. Having in mind the fact that politically we want to leave the impression we're going to just continue to fight the cost of living. My own personal view is that after the election we can put out that thing out. Mainly for the reason that I don't think it's going to work anymore. It's not going to work. I don't see, for example, our Highland Labor. Those guys have been very good. They've been very good, and I think that's one way to seal our bargain with labor when we sell them to them. You want to say, look, fellas, can you make a labor doing something to them? The hell with business. I mean, they've got some
group that wants it.
Well, they're the worst, too, and they deserve nothing from us except to kick in the butt. That's all. Nothing.
One of the most insidious things that has happened is that
business is letting us do the
market. It's now saying, all right, why should we have a fight with the union?
Yeah.
We'll agree with the union.
All right.
Pass it on to the government.
No, it's not going to be done. Not going to be done. We will serve on the new commission, as I
do think. The new commission on industrial peace?
Yeah.
Well, he feels, and it is the case, but he feels that it's his idea.
Great.
And that you bought it. And I took that speech over to him.
I know you.
And I went through it page by page, and he made some suggestions, and they got in
great.
The notes. And,
great.
He's feeling
great.
He just wishes he could come out for it.
What he did for that, what he did to those reporters, I really was impressed. He just murdered me. Murdered me. But he's smarter than they are, George.
Yeah, he is a smart guy.
Smart, quick, exciting. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's fine. That's what my thinking is. You know, I think that's what man controls.
Well, the only question would be whether we should go further.
And flush the cost of living council.
Flush
the cost of living council. The difficulty that I see with flushing that is it puts it all right in here. I'd rather have some place to put it off to a little to the side so we can. Sorry, I'll let you. I think that you shouldn't use the big gun so often. I can't call it every damn time. You'll have old things on them. Maybe the lumber people are high. It's your idea. I can't think. Or the doctors and the rest. Well, I like the cost of living council. I think that's good. And I think the legislation should be there. But the rest should go.
Okay. Well,
that's
we'll work.
That's my thinking.
We'll work down that track. A side argument in favor of doing it this way is that the there are quite a few labor contracts, and there may be quite a few price contracts, but we don't have any information, that stipulate that they are automatically opened as soon as the controls are off. And we can write an executive order that changes this mechanism in such a way that the controls aren't off, but the mechanism has changed.
I
so that we don't trigger all those contracts. We're
right.
trying to have that
control your name, but the mechanism for enforcing it. I got it.
Okay. The third big thing we're working on in the Treasury, and I would have to say this is the most difficult thing I have ever tackled, is taxes.
I know.
It is so hard. Frustrating. It's possible to think of millions of reasons why anything that you suggest is not particularly good. But let me, and I know John has kept you filled on the different things that we've been trying out to get some feedback on that. We definitely have the short form in the book, and along in about the 1st of October, that has been put out for comment. There's been some newspaper things about it, but there hasn't been any announcement. Along about the 1st of October, we would take the final decision on precisely how to put that up, and that is a major simplification in that some 30 million taxpayers have a much simpler thing. Incidentally, the Sears Roebuck people have been very helpful. What's his name? Send his best catalog man that comes to look at the form. I don't know, it's still
complicated. The lawyers.
Anyway, we have been trying to make it simple.
Right.
There's that. Now, one thing that we can do is sort of the following parlay. We could say, first, the president proposed a minimum tax back in 1969 that is a way of handling some of these methods of getting around paying taxes without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which you do when you just sort of junk preferences right and left, because the preferences are designed really to draw money into this or that or the other. There's a purpose. And just because somebody exploits it, that doesn't mean that you let go of the purpose. So the minimum tax idea was designed originally to get at that. Congress did not buy it. So one thing that could be done, and I'm not advocating this here, I'm just trying to see how you react to it. We could say, well, here's this thing, it's still on the plate.
How much? Who's this covering?
It does not raise you very much money. Basically gets at people who make large use of tax preferences. And I can't give you the exact number, but in its full-blown sense, it would raise more than $600 million.
But it is a tax increase for people that make money.
It is a tax increase for people who have managed to keep their tax way down by the use of tax shelter. The angle here, though, I'm trying to think of things not only in terms of a proposal for next year, but in terms of if you wanted to do something before the election.
Yeah.
I think the angle here is, well, the president's been way ahead of this game.
Yeah.
Here's what we proposed in 1969. If the Congress had acted on it, we wouldn't be having quite the same kind of discussion.
Yeah.
So let them act on it. Well, that reminds people that you're not a Johnny-Come Lately of this subject.
Right.
And you have been working on it. And it does raise a small amount.
Right.
Now, then there is the question of the property tax.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one because there's a large sum of money involved, and you got to get it from somewhere.
Yeah.
And so if you have a VAT, you raise taxes. If you have an income tax increase, that's an increase. So on. So you've got to get it from somewhere. How could it possibly be done? Well, here is a thought on it, and maybe that this would just be thrown out with derision. I don't know. You get a little bit of money from the minimum tax. The alcohol, based on gallonage, not value. That is, you get the taxes, federal taxes, so much per gallon, rather than so much per dollar. You could say that if we're going to tax drinking, let's not tax it in a regressive way so that the poor man pays more than the rich man. Let's tax it on a dollar basis. If you made that change, you could make it in such a way that you also raise a little bit of money. We could, in one way or another, find ourselves something on the order of a couple of billion dollars between these things. Now, then, with respect to the property tax, what we could do is to say, well, what we're really concerned about is not the property tax that's paid by a business. It's the property tax paid by a homeowner.
Right.
And we're particularly concerned about the property tax paid by the elderly homeowner, whose income has declined. And I suppose, in addition to that, we could say something about low-income property taxpayers. But anyway, elderly is where the political aspect
is. We like elderly wage earners, so we want low-income.
So we could say, here is that we are going to get at this property tax thing in a sort of a programmatic sense. We have a plan for doing it. It's going to take several years to unfold. You can't do everything at once. But the first bite is with respect to the elderly. Now, I think that we could work the number down probably on the order of a couple of billion dollars, and therefore we could say we got that money if you make this kind of a trade. And we could do that, and the elderly could do that basically on their tax form. And then we would have to have some programmatic way for getting up to a larger sum, which I would guess must be on the order of, say, $10 billion. Now, I think that a way to do this is through some combination of a federal incentive combined with piggybacking. States piggybacking on the income tax. This I was proposing to you in connection with schools, education financing. The piggybacking concept is in the revenue sharing bill. So that's something that could be built on. On the other hand, there's no states have adopted unless there was some kind of special incentive, because there's nothing that would get them that. But that could become a basis for saying, as the years go on, we build up to this amount and we can do something about the property tax thing. Well, I recognize that is, in a sense, it's small potatoes compared with $15 billion or $20 billion or even $10 billion, but we're struggling to get at it. Now, another angle. Of course, John mentioned that he talked with you about this, is taking this escalation idea, which Milton Friedman has suggested we've been working on, and saying that we're going to use some of the income generated as a result of that for this purpose. Now that,
rather,
in other words,
rather than just taking the so-called invisible dividend and putting it all into more spending.
Right, we put it into
the
theory, if I just pick up on that and then I'll get to the numbers, is that, of course, he wants to do anything he can to keep the size of government down.
And
he figures that the only way you're going to do it is to keep taxes down, and that's the censorship. And he points out that periodically, as the rate of tax on personal income rises from 10% up, Congress comes along and they cut it in one way or another, and it has wound up over a considerable period of time at roughly 10%. And each time that cutting process goes on, then whoever is president, whoever is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, stand up and they say, I cut your taxes. But here's a chance where one president can, in effect, take all the marbles, and once that's been done, there's no subsequent man can. But nevertheless, once, somebody can get up and say, well, let's do this systematically, and let us have an annual process or some kind of process in which the extent to which people are paying more because of inflation is milked out of the tax system, and they don't have to pay it.
Do you think Wilbur Mills is dumb?
He thinks Wilbur Mills is smart, but he thinks this might have a lot of political appeal.
Once.
What?
Yeah, Wilbur Mills runs every 2 years.
Right.
On the other hand, doesn't make a difference.
The other side of the thing is, of course, we're struggling to find the money to pay for the budget, even under the strictest of the circumstances, and this would be, in effect, a tax cut.
What's the bottom line?
At the bottom line, depends on your assumption. You've got roughly $93 billion being collected in personal income. If you assume a 3% rate of inflation, when you translate that into what it means in terms of taxes paid because of the bracket escalation, it would give you slightly over a 4% increase in taxes. So you apply your 4% to the 93, and so you've got around 4.
You only take the rate of inflation, you wouldn't take any growth of the economy.
Well, you could. You can affect the federal tax take increases due to three factors. It increases because the economy gets bigger, more people are at work, and so forth. That you wouldn't do anything. It increases because productivity increases and real incomes rise. That increases because of inflation. You could take the inflation, and the real income, do it on sort of a per capita, deflated per capita income basis. I don't think you'd want to do anything with the third, because that just is part of the general growth of the labor force.
Well,
but you could do the real income.
How many bucks can we assign to that?
If you figure real income rises about 4% per year, and that breaks out roughly 3% per sort of productivity induced, 1% population induced.
You've got another 3.72
billion. You could get another number that way.
So we're looking at 6-7.5 billion a year.
If you took the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind that a figure like that, 3% to 4% inflation that I gave you, is a combination of the fact that incomes rise within brackets and you pay more at the same rate, and partly because as that happens, some people move into higher brackets and you escalate their rate of tax. One could argue that it's the rate of tax increase that you really ought to be getting at rather than the whole rate of income.
Something to be said, and I'd like to economy and from a political standpoint, the minimum tax point, does appeal as a tax reform. And then you say, that will be the beginning. Here's my view on the property tax thing. The property tax thing, rather than gobble it all up and go through all that stuff, is impossible. We have got the money. I think, for example, taking it and giving just relief to the owner, that's all. Don't worry, nobody else, not the poor. Good God, we've got too much already, when I say too much. We've got that OEO thing that we're going to have to sign, and all the rest of it. We'd love to do more, but we, you know, we took 9 million and we're off the tax. We have this open-ended situation, you know, with our debt. And I think that's enough. I think that the poor people that own their properties is too bad. Why not just deal with it?
Well,
at this point,
people
don't own property.
The people you're talking about here are
poor people who own property.
The blue-collar workers who are getting taxed right out of their house.
Well, all right. If you get that appeal to me, then that's some labor guys. Then how many of those are we talking about?
Lots.
Well, that's my point. That's
like a lot of little frame houses and
that costs a hell of a lot of money.
Sure does. You said it does. No question.
The way you get that is out of this.
Here's a three-year plan
appeals to me, George, for a very fundamental reason. I believe we need a restraint on government spending. I know that 60% of the budget or 70% of the budget can't be touched. I know that it's interest for the national debt and all the other things, Social Security, right? But on the other hand, I think government is too big. Believe me, we win this election, this goddamn White House staff is going to be cut in half. We'll play the place right here. And the agency's going to cut their damn staff down. Everybody's going to cut. I mean, it's the whole thing. It's disgusting what's happening there. And it's just going to grow like Popsy. And then they say, they're all asking, what are our new programs for next year? I don't want any new programs. None. Don't spend any more money. It's too big. We've got enough on that plate already. That's what Friedman's getting at.
Right.
Friedman knows that if you figure, well, now we've got this much more money, so we're going to spend it. I don't believe in spending up that. I think we ought to have a break on it. So that's the idea of the philosophy. I'd like you to go back to the drawing boards in terms of that philosophy. And then you see, John, my view is about your guy down there. Don't give him the relief right away. I put it in a 4-year plan.
Well, with his numbers, we can do it on a 2-year plan.
Don't promise too much. Do it on a 4-year plan. In other words, we have a 4-year plan that we should have this by this and this and this. That is more realistic. See my point? Don't have it. And don't put the tax on booze and all these other things. I don't want anything. I think that the minimum, what do you think about the minimum tax?
Well, I was for it to begin with. I think it's
well, true. I am too, yeah. But what if I ask for Connelly thinks?
All right.
Well, now, understand, I don't care about the rich people. We just say there should be, everybody should pay some. Remember, I made that speech in Cabinet Room.
Very simple.
The poor should pay no tax, and the rich should pay some tax.
Everybody
right?
Should pay
the charge. Yeah. And then they didn't do it.
What do you think of the piggybacking idea?
No political moxie.
No,
there's
no
understands it. No, I don't. That one bothers me. I think it's going to look like raising taxes.
It provides an administrative means by which states can decide whether or not they want to do it.
Yeah.
Get the federal government out from under that.
I'm afraid it's too complicated. I don't rule it out for later.
Capital gains thing is a total fraud, in my view, for this reason.
I'm talking about proposal. validity of the file. Excuse me, furthermore.
Furthermore, when you consider that much of capital gain is really simply the result of the application of, say, a 48% rate to that practically confiscates the real gain.
I got you.
This is something that I wrote out in the...
Anyway, I got you.
We've got to get another word for people. What these are, there are public policy decisions that the Congress made.
These are taxes, using the tax system for the purpose of social purposes. That's what they say. So we consider it being the interest of the country.
Come in, John.
Yeah, how are you?
Well,
you know, you're working.
I know.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you.
You've got a great time.
Hey, John. That's California.
You know, the Secretary of Treasury, but the Secretary of Treasury. We're just
talking about having a tax
on our rich folks. John, we discussed one point here with them on a deal, which I asked John and George to discuss with you further. And we're going to bring up next week. Otherwise, that's fine. Okay, goodbye.
Thank you.
Friend. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
And we are bringing the new international monitor. Your water is just right. I'm sure he said yours, so we agreed to make a speech. And the other thing is, George, if you would pull together all of the, as you suggested, I think John, you know, I think get every former Secretary of the Treasury, if you can, to look at this thing. What do you think? You get $13, you know, and then have a real punch on it. If they all come in, if you could bring them all in at one time, I'd be very glad to see them. I think it'd be a rather nice thing.
Sure.
But they also mean a lot of them are friends of ours, John.
They'll all be on the plane for the different party for George.
Are they? Well, bring them in for you tell George that you mentioned Holman, and we can come in and have a little meeting on this very important problem. But you set it up first, so you sold them before, so I don't have to.
George, I saw the big story printed on the directors of the fund. You said, right, they did see funds.
Well, all the funds are trying
they don't agree on anything except that they ought to put it to us.
Sure. Raise the price.
That's the only thing they agree
on. Yeah, that's nice.
So that, I think that's all the votes we want.
We work on, make sure you work on our directors, et cetera. I'm working on that. Aren't you guys taking a lot of work?
I don't know. Stretched out, he said,
you know that each state, which they told us this, the house we bought is with his own right hand, Cotton, who was the Democratic National Treasurer to that back then. And one night he came down on the Southern Pacific Railroad, the train stopped, and they brought him up there, and he stayed overnight at that house.
I didn't ask that question.
Yes, he sure did. Interesting. And you see now,
especially our place to
Cotton's a great friend and supporter of his, of course.
Yes.
Leading Democrat.
Right.
I haven't been that Patrick.
That's how Alex signed the
money. Sometimes Cotton, you gotta see the person up in the Elsker room where they were all supposed to play cards or something one night. Or polo
probably.
Or that's my answer.
Right.
No, it is. I just love it.
They like
it. Oh, yeah.
Play
a five card, or do you like wild cards?
I'm a five card man. I like it.
Once in a while, one or two of the others would want to go play a wild game.
Wild games is not poker.
No, really.
They're fun,
but they're not poker.
That's right.
But you've got the five cards. You just want the odd cards.
Yeah.
But we used to have plenty of wild games in the day. If you, if you're the chairman or John, or put it in the back of your mind. Let's don't talk about it now. And talk to John about it later. And if you're interested. There are other kinds of things of this sort too, where there are agencies that by our representation, there are special commission, there are obligations to the region, and the extent that you'd be interested in you and
Charter, one reason or another has stuck in people's minds and sure. Around history. have a Nixon jar or whatever name you want to give to it, which would in essence try to get all of the countries of the world to implement the words of the Declaration of Independence, which simply says all people are endowed with certain inalienable rights. You might have a hard time getting everybody to agree which rights you would list, but if you made it as general as the Atlantic Charter was, that was pretty general. I mean, everybody's against poverty and everybody's that kind of thing. You might have something that every kind of political philosophy could subscribe to and have a kind of attempting to offset this disunity that's in the world and have something that out of this fourth, this 76 celebration could come. That kind of an international declaration and how you set it up would be something we could work on if you thought it had the American.
It does. Some, because they say the words don't matter. Words really change the world. Everybody remembers the mighty Charlie. There it was. Ship was it?
Yes, sir.
What was it? Virtually on the same
right.
And out of it came, it caught the imagination of the world. You mean, you take Wilson, World War One, Wilson, after the war, had hellish problems. But his 14 points, probably short of the war, but talking directly to the German people.
Sure.
Remember it now, some of those things.
We've got enough time to do the legwork and the planning for it, so that we might be,
and we ought to be able to get pretty smart people to work on this sort of thing after the election. And I think we'll have a situation where your intellectuals and whatever their bets have been before will want to be on the show.
I think so.
I suggested to Johnny's holy Eisenhower Fellowship Foundation that I've been a trustee of since its inception, like Tom McKay, and Happy Bonds and some of the graduates of that, some of those fellows that have been from all over the world on the other thing. Because I think we haven't had anybody from China. And I think the rest of the world, these are people that we can work with in those governments, because sure, I know that Bradley, like the Prime Minister of Turkey, was right now graduate here in
Mars. They have a great seating effect. He was very proud of that in his last days. He used to talk about his England and Iceberg. Well, we're not this Latin American country, who's the Minister of Commerce, another one here, which is great. He's a great deal.
Tom, of course, McKay did a great job. He was on Jim Knox's chat. Bob Anderson is doing a great job.
What is the situation there? I remember going there briefly.
And I've never been there.
This library just started really in the more in the Eisenhower and now Johnson period. It's an adequate job they've done with regard to your.
And take good care of the house. Good. And it's really beautiful.
I'll go see one there.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
I've got to see it.
I never been there. Be wonderful.
I haven't got anything else to do.
In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. I was about General Eisenhower was president. He invited me to bring my three then school age children in for a 9 o'clock appointment. We came in, and you know how he was. He just took those kids and talked to them about their school curriculum and their history and what they're learning in history. And we sat here for almost an hour. The secretary kept coming in, let him go. He wouldn't let him go. Finally, when we got outside, my oldest son said to me, you know, the president was just wonderful to us. He said, I just can't believe it. He said, we were there almost an hour. He said to me, look, doesn't the president have anything to do? Just a little bit. I've got one other area that I noticed in your Labor Day, was it your Labor Day speech? You mentioned appointing a commissioner.
Commission on Labor, industrial peace.
Right, which has always been one of my great interests when I was chairman of the Labor Committee in the House.
Yeah. I don't know whether I would be considered to, because of that, to be ineligible, but if not, I'd love to be a consultant or something and put some time in it, because I'm very interested in solving that problem. And it's an interesting, it's a vastly interesting area. And I've known the people in England for a long while, and they, of course, going through a very interesting time in their labor relations, for sure. They go,
we are not saying that, well, at this point, we have kind of commitments before I made this speech that major labor union leaders will participate in it.
Good.
After the election, that's sort of good.
Because that machinery we have working out would be.
But I think that one, if we get it through cooperation and meet each other, because I've got enough problems trying to.
We've got to get rid of the word compulsory arbitration and think of some other way to do it. But basically, that's what you're going to come to.
Someday, you've got to have somebody to
tell our guys.
Yeah, because business, for example, says right at the present time, they, rather than fight anything out with the labor unions, they say, why don't you pay for it? Tell them, well, they do what they want, right? And labor, on the other hand, some of the labor leaders, right, they're trying to be responsible and keep their own leadership. Right, so they'll let them pay for it if this joint's saying.
Sure.
So, but that's all right. But collective bargaining up to a point about grievances and a lot of other things, and then in the ballpark about the numbers, when you finally get down to a critical issue, and if you're going to have a strike, particularly in the movement, certain areas that affect them, well, they're going to say, God, I'm just going to affect the whole class.
Yeah. You know, some of the teacher strikes.
Yeah, one of New York, that's one of New York, yes. People in this state of reform, let me tell you, you have a teacher strike in New York, in our other place. They have those brats home for a little while, so they're going to squeal.
That's really right now, in the process.
That's right.
Well, we'll let it drop.
We'll work hard enough for
that.
Appreciate your help here. You got a little couple of trinkets, souvenirs. That's the presidential seal on the cup. Which is, as you notice, for your wife, which is how I put it in.
Well,
and then I'll turn to you too.
That's all you have. You know, I have a British wife.
Oh,
really? She can't offset my vote, you see, on any certain side.
Oh, cool. My
vote.
Yes. Well,
right?
I'm going to give you a talking.